This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Jay DeSima. Jay is a very experienced investor with nearly 50 years of experience. Since 1977, he has specialized in fixing up ugly houses and small apartment buildings. Jay is also a successful career changer, having worked for over 20 years for the telephone company before switching to full-time real estate investing in 1979. Today, Jay spends the majority of his time managing and overseeing his investment houses and training others who wish to pursue this lucrative profession. Jay has authored three best-selling how-to books published by McGraw-Hill. Investing in Fixer Uppers was voted number one real estate book in 2003 by the LA Times and Chicago Sun. Start Small, Profit Big in Real Estate advises readers how to develop a two-year plan for building wealth, starting from scratch, and create enough cash flow to quit their job. And Goldmine Houses teaches readers how small apartments and multiple houses called colonies can speed up wealth process and get you the finish line in quicker fashion. So, Jay, we welcome you to our show. We've never talked on the radio, so I'm excited.
Okay, Bruce, I certainly appreciate you having me on, and thank you. And everything is fine here, and so we'll commence here.
Okay.
And, see what.
Now you had a career doing something completely different. So, what about the mid-70s got you interested in real estate?
Well, I moved to Redding, which is in Northern California. Poor people country, not the Bay Area. That's 250 miles south. So big difference, huge difference. I had been investing before that, Bruce, in Sacramento before 77. 77 is when I moved. And it was about, actually in 77, I started moving directly into the multiple units. I saw a way to benefit a great deal more with those, but I had been investing even 20 years before that in Sacramento, California, and one at a time, mostly buying REO houses. And as you know, a person, even though I had a real good job with the phone company, the fact is the phone company isn't known for overpaying. So as a result of that, you never build up a lot of money. And so buying REOs for small down payments, that's the game I played for a long time. And then, it dawned on me, I don't know why it took so long, but it dawned on me one time that when you pay minimum down, very little down, then you have a rather large debt service, a rather large monthly nut to crack, and there's hardly any cash flow left at the end of the rainbow there. So you fix them up, you rent them, you become a landlord, and you almost do that for nothing. So you have to have a really strong love affair to pursue that course. That was kind of my start in Sacramento. But I've had the fire in the belly for real estate since my 20s. And as you well know, anybody that sees my picture will think I have distanced myself from that age bracket now.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we got to speak for probably about an hour a few nights ago, and that was a lot of fun. And
it was. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, and you're young, a lot younger than your age. And that's pretty exciting. That's pretty cool. So REOs, I honestly, since I'm a chart guy, I was thinking REOs were initiated, you know, in the early 80s, but you found them in the 50s or the 60s?
They might have called them something different. You know, they're bank takebacks,
yeah,
if you were.
Sure.
Somebody let a house run down, didn't make mortgage payments, the bank took them back. In the 50s. I'll put it this way, in the 60s.
Okay.
Mostly 60s and early 70s, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
One at a time I would buy. I'd buy one at a time, and I would, you know the term moonlight, don't you?
Sure. Did a little bit of that.
Yeah, we just about everybody, you know, has done that, reaches a point where, you know, kind of we're both at, has knowledge of what moonlighting means. I hardly know anyone successful in real estate, Bruce, who started out with a bag full of money. Money is not, you believe you need money to get going, but really, you don't. You need knowledge to get going.
Well, you mentioned the fire in the belly. So describe, do you know why you had that?
I just, I look back, sometimes I'll say this in a book, that even as a paper boy, now what are you? You're probably 11 years old delivering papers, right?
Right.
That's about the age. They don't even have them anymore, but I did it. And in the hot summer months in Reading, it gets 118, and I'm out delivering papers at 3 in the afternoon. Now, I'm just a kid, of course, on a bicycle with 100 papers in a bag, throwing them at the porch. There must be, in my mind, there must be some way that I could earn a few bucks without being out in this mess and doing this. And then my mother would get me up on a rainy day. It was already, 3 in the afternoon. You know, the sun never came out, and it was storming and Reading and freezing. And that was the winter time. And there seemed to me there had to be a better way. Real estate, you know, I knew a couple of people that owned real estate, and they had rentals, and they collected rents, and I just thought, well, you know, that might be some way to do it. Now, before I got into that thinking mode, though, I was always in love with the mountains and the foothills and the pines and the trees. So my first venture into real estate in my 20s was to buy vacant land in the hills surrounding Reading here. I was raised around Reading, but I left. That's how I ended up coming back after I spent time in the Army in lighting in Sacramento and then eventually working my way back. But I was raised in Reading.
Okay.
So these foothills, I love being up in the mountains. So I pictured I heard about people who bought 40 acres and made, four tens out of it, sold a couple 10-acre parcels, paid for the whole 40, and then the profit was in the next two. So I thought, well, now that's got to be a pretty good little deal there. And so I played with that for a while. I even built a little, mountain cabin on one of them. And I sold them, and I did exactly that. Sell them on contracts, not transfer, $500 down. And, I had the deed still in my name and wouldn't transfer, till I had put a little money on the principal. But monthly payments, and I thought that one might be a nice little gig. And then I began to study real estate. I was always interested in the real estate. You're asking me why. I thought, I looked around at people that owned real estate, although I couldn't prove it and didn't know it, they always seemed to dress nicer, have a bigger car, and take more vacations than people that went to work like me. It just appeared, I know that this is appearance, but it just seemed like that to me. So I was interested in the real estate, and then eventually I realized that, well, you can sell this. You're just kind of what they call a dealer doing this. There's no tax advantages or anything, and there's no write-offs, which we call, mostly depreciation, those kind of things, where the government will help you. So those things are missing in that early plan. And so it evolved into, I need to own improved real estate.
Okay.
And then I started buying properties. And the kind of properties I could afford were the rundown type, because I sometimes showed up on the doorstep as being the only one to make an offer. And as you well know, being the only one who wants the property, that's quite an advantage for a buyer.
Yeah.
Now, you have to be able to do something once you get it, or you could sink like lead in a fishbowl, So you have to be able to. Now, I had no special training, I was no carpenter, but I was very handy. I was handy. I describe myself as the type of carpenter that cuts the board three times and that's still too short. But you know what I did? I just kept doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I would not give up on it. And what I did to learn a little bit more about being handy and about fixing things was to go out in the 60s and 70s in the Sacramento when they had great subdivisions being built out there. And I would look at the construction of houses in subdivisions being built at the framing stage, where you can see the wires, the pipes, and all this stuff, and how they do framing, the doors, windows. I remember in my first fix-up jobs, my bathroom sink, I remember gurgle, 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 gurgle. And I said, well, what in the good Lord is that noise?
Mm-hmm.
The water won't hardly go down in my bathroom sink. And then I learned, well, you got to have a vent in there. And I found that out. I walked out to a guy. You tell a mechanic out in the field, you got to be careful that the boss don't observe you taking the man's time. But if you can do this kind of sneaky, you walk out and you tell a plumber, boy, oh boy, you've got to be a genius to do this type of job. Boy, they shine up. They'll tell you their whole history. So I learned, I said, I got a sink that gurgles. He says, it gurgles. He says, well, what do you think's the matter with it? And he says, I think what you're missing is a vent. I says, a what?
Mm-hmm.
A vent. Yeah, and he showed me a vent and how it works. Well, that solved the problem right there. Did basically stuff like that with electricity and so forth. So I got pretty handy.
Did you have?
And
did you have any early mentors?
I had an old timer named Bill Nickerson, William Nickerson. He was quite famous in the 50s and 60s, writing a book on how I, converted, or it's not that, see,
how I made something into $1 million, right?
Yeah, and it started off with, I believe it started off how I turned $1,000 into $1 million, and then it went to $1,000 into $2 million on revisions of this particular book, and that was a kind of sort of a complex, he explained everything and had sold a million copies of that book with Simon Schuster. He and I became acquainted, and so I would rely on him. I'd call him, and he was very, very nice about helping. And, I was interested in the investment in, but we became really good buddies, and you know why?
Why?
Bill and I both work for the phone company.
Ah.
So he didn't do the same. I was in construction and he was in marketing, but that was a little tie between us. And he told me about his high paying job in the Depression. He got $3 a day. and about how he got started with his wife, Lucille, and they didn't know anything either. They're just like me. They started, but became very successful, and Bill would tackle a lot of these same issues that I had, and there was kind of a cute little story about him. Lucille, his wife, was not 5 feet tall. She was like 4'10".
Mm-hmm.
And Bill wasn't too big, but they talked about painting. And Lucille would paint the lower part of a wall, and then Bill had a ladder and put the ladder on top of her, the legs straddling her, and he would do to the ceiling over the top of her. a combined effort there. But anyway, yeah, he was kind of an early mentor. And then I met a guy who was a broker in real estate, and that was in Reading. And he had been an investor. He was one of these smart guys. I didn't realize it, but he would, about every third deal he did, sale he made, he would take, you know, a commission and turn it back in and buy a rental, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he had a bunch of rentals, and he had the old junker type. And so he and I did a lot of chatting back and forth. And he was a guy that if I said the wrong thing or acted like I questioned him, he hung the phone up on me. He just hung up. He couldn't take... he didn't want to hear anything out of a smart puppy like me. You know, he and I were about 30 years age difference, and he wasn't going to take anything off me. So I'd have to call him back and say, geez, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. but I learned a lot from the guy, and particularly in the area of what to buy and what made sense and how to kind of buy where you weren't competing with everybody on the block. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What type of property did that turn out to be?
It turned out to be the old, most of his stuff was older rentals, and he bought economy rentals. And I finally made studies of this myself. Lower end rentals. I mentioned at the outset, Reading is a low income town. So I made kind of a little study, and I felt that I wanted to buy rental houses where 80% of those who rent in my town could afford my houses. And therefore, I felt I'd always have them rented. And that worked out very well for me. So those were lower income. Those were lower income. So that's what we have in Reading. We don't have any big jobs or anything. You know, everybody worked at the mill in the early years, and then the mills all shut down, and they went to service jobs. And, you know, the highest paid job would be the city hall or the forestry or the state of California. Well, those people weren't my customers. But all the other service-type people, nurses and you know, the practical nurse type people, they were all my customers. And so that proved out quite well. And so my strategy evolved around to where it started in Sacramento with the singles. And I remember having 23 houses. I write about this, but I had 23 houses. And if two of them were vacant, I had to feed the whole mess with my telephone paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, you know, there's got to be, I must be going a little too, I'm working my tail off, so it's not work. I'm going too fast. I must have missed a chapter somewhere in a book. Because, you know, the title said I'd be rich.
Not yet, though, huh?
And I said, how can you be rich when you have to, you know, feed the property with a paycheck working for a living? So anyway, the big mortgages and so forth, and I learned that, well, that's how it is. That's really how it is. So I was interested in the back of my mind, even though I liked my telephone job and the people, I loved working there. I thought financially in my life, I could do better. because I was never afraid to work. I'm not afraid to outwork you at all. Even at the phone company, any overtime, I volunteered. So I'm not afraid. I would get out there fixing these houses and work till midnight and then go to work the next day, you know, and do the same. Not every day, of course, but a lot. And I spent all my vacations and my weekends doing this. So, I'm not afraid to work, but I want to work and make some gains somehow. That's what took me a little time.
Okay.
Eventually, I ended up buying small groups of the same kind of houses, small. My number one earner on a ratio basis, you know, what I've got into it versus what I take out, has been a two-bedroom, one-bath, older house. Because when I buy them in bunches, I get the unit price down cheaper, kind of like buying bananas, you know, and yet rents are governed, you know, by the market.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a nice place that people want with a little yard around it and some fences or something, the fact that you have six houses, maybe up a little driveway, three on one side or three on the other, I could get those cheaper, but I could fix them up and rent them out at the full retail price for houses of that size, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that built in some money there. And I found that when you get them run down and you get tenants that are giving an owner trouble or something like that, and you're able to handle that situation, then you can get them even cheaper, even cheaper. And so by getting that purchase price down and being able to get terms, and then there was another key, I didn't realize this in the early years, there was another key item that fell into place here for me, and that was no bank will loan money on these older junk houses over four units.
Uh-huh.
All the bank forms are designed for one to four, as you well know, Fannie Mae, the whole bunch. So you can't get any financing from a bank. As a matter of fact, you walk into the bank trying to borrow on some of my houses, the banker will throw up. But the thing is, what does that do? That forces a person who is selling to carry paper. Now, that opened up a whole new ball game for me. And so some of these things, you know, I didn't know them in the beginning. It takes time to learn this. And but that was kind of my progress up to them. And apartments fall into the same category. Somebody says, well, why don't you just buy apartment buildings? I'll tell you why I don't. Because I'm buying for my customer. It's kind of like a lady that runs a dress shop. She knows that the people in her town like red. So she brings in red dresses. She'd be a fool to bring in blue ones. Well, young people who I rent to and seniors, those are my people. People in the middle who are buying homes, those are not my customers, Bruce.
Okay.
Those are people buying home. You know, my business is a rental business.
Jay, I want you to hold that thought. We're going to end our first segment, and I want to come back to that because you've brought up a great point about why you don't concentrate on apartments. So thanks for joining us, Jay, and we'll get right back to the subject in our next segment.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.